Hey lifers, we have an awesome opportunity for our listeners. We have partnered with PowerTank, the premier system for carrying air on your Jeep, on your off-road vehicle, and your personal life around the shop. But we've partnered with them to offer our listeners a discount. And we've got a discount code, JeepLifePod15, and that'll get you 15% off of an entire system. And their systems are absolutely terrific. I run one in my Jeep, and it's great to be able to hit the trails, you know, air down so I can hit all those obstacles. And when I get off, I can just go straight to my tank, hook it up, run from 15 PSI up to 35 PSI in about 30 seconds per tire. So in 2 minutes, 3 minutes, I'm done and ready to go. I have the 10-pound system, and it is terrific. So 15% off on your power tank can be available at powertank.com. It is a full system that they're asking for. This is a limited time, so at some point it might run out. But for right now, Jeep Life Pod 15, and they get you 15% off the regular price. Our thanks to Power Tank for providing that discount to our listeners, and enjoy the show. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Jeep Life Podcast. We're a podcast where we celebrate that Jeep life and everything that comes along with it. And, man, it's been a heck of a day. And those people that are with me with Facebook have gone through some of trials and tribulations of getting us on air. And I hope everybody has us on air now and is able to hear us because I am joined not by the empty seats that are on either side of us, but I am joined by our technical advisor, my go-to source of information, Mr. Scott. Scott, how are we doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Man, it's good to hear your voice again. It's been almost 24 hours.
It has.
Yeah, I love it.
What a great weekend.
It was an awesome weekend, and what he's referring to is the Jeep Enthusiast of Eastern Pennsylvania had their 2020 fall ride. Now that we're able to get out and enjoy some beautiful weather, we had our fall trail ride, and we did that at Anthracite Outdoor Adventure Area, which is the park in the area. There are multiple parks in the area, but that is the park in the area.
That's my favorite.
Oh, yeah, mine too. And, you know, we had to come up with some guides to help us out. We had basically 90 Jeeps.
Oh, is that how? But man, last I heard it was like close to 60. You got 90 out there.
Yeah. There were 87 official that we found, and I think a couple more came in right as we were going out. So, yeah, right at 90, which means about 180, because everybody averages, you know, two people for Jeep. Some of them have only one, some have three, some have four.
Right. So there were some dogs.
Yeah, definitely some.
We count the dogs, right?
They probably count them more than we do the people, you know. I was struggling to find. I took on a lot of the organization of the ride, and I was struggling finding really good trail guides. And some of them are actually on with us with Facebook Live and singing in there with us. But man, the guides we had, and I know I asked you and your brother to come out and take over the really challenging stuff for us and guide through there. And that was awesome to have you guys involved and share your knowledge with those folks. I know Ron, one of our listeners, was there and leading, and Neil. I think, you know, between you and me and Eric and Neil and Ron, we pretty much know every square inch of that park.
Yeah. But there's still more to learn. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, last weekend, you and I went on a trail I'd never been on before. It was a long trail, but it was a great trail, you know?
Yeah.
And you guys.
Yeah, and then you took me on Fern Ridge, which I'd never been on before either.
Oh, right.
And then I went back this week because I had to show my brother because he hadn't seen it.
Yeah. That's a great little extended section that you can get off and on.
Oh, it sure is.
In different parts. And I really like that. Yeah, so you guys jumped in there and was guides for me, and you know, having that number of people experience, I mean, I would say 50% of the people have never been off road before.
Yeah,
this is their first time coming out, and the cool thing about AOAA is you can, it's for everybody. I think, you know, if you've got a stock vehicle, a stock Jeep, I think you're going to be fine and find plenty to enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then if you got a built out rig like you and your brother and, you know, some of the others out there, then there's plenty for those people to enjoy.
Sure.
You know,
and that's, I think that's an underutilized part of it. There's a lot of people that, we've talked about this a couple of times, you and I, are a lot of people that think, you know, the more challenging terrain is only at Roush or is only at FRO or whatever, but there's a very deep, I don't want to say depth, but there's a lot of variance in blue. Like the blue trails, some of them are just a step above green, but then some of them are very, very challenging, and you really can't go fast on them. You can't, you know, you really actually have to pay attention to what you're doing because there are consequences if you go the wrong way.
Oh, absolutely. And it's interesting. You and I have talked about this before. That I think there's a blurry line between some of the greens and some of the blues.
Sure.
And I think there's a blurry line between some of the blues and some of the blacks, even.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's tough when you only have really four different levels. I mean, there's so much variation. You can't really.
Yeah,
categorize them all perfectly.
It's true. I mean, I took people on Trail 12, and there are parts of Trail 12 that, you know, on a lot of parks, it's a green trail marked green, but there are parts of it that borderline on blue and would be blue in some parks.
Sure.
You know, or you know, a trail rated 3 to 4, you know, on that, and then you know, you and I went on Fern Ridge, and there are. Even in there's black offshoots that I know you guys went on, but even the blue part of Fern Ridge, there are black parts of it. You know, if you want to try to take that harder line, it's almost a wide enough trail that there are harder lines that you can take to give it that black feeling. You know,
well there are sections of red. In the black, in the ears that come off Fern Ridge, there's some sections of red trail, like
yep.
lines that you wouldn't normally take, but are doable. Ones that I wouldn't take, but Eric was already plotting a return to that trail with Overkill, you know, and going, well, here's where we're going to go. We're going to go up this way, and then we're going to want a safety line on it here.
Yep.
So, but he's definitely, you know, he said we could try it, but it would probably be the rest of the day. So yeah. We're going to spend a lot of time there. There's so much just on that trail to enjoy and so much fun stuff to do. I mean, like Billy got to stretch his legs. We went on some pretty aggressive trails and he drove his Jeep home. Can you believe that?
And you know, normally there's caution tape wrapped around, you know, wherever he parks because it becomes a repair zone, or maybe he only gets 100 feet up a trail before, you know, throwing out a steering box.
Right.
But yeah, he drove his Jeep there, no repairs, played around all day, and then drove it home, no repairs. So that's pretty
awesome. Listen, our entire trail group 9, had no trail damage for the entire group.
That's awesome.
And honestly, with Billy at the wheel, the odds were stacked against us.
they definitely were. Yeah. One of our listeners has a question. Any suggestions for someone who's only been there once? Normally runs blues and blacks at Roush. Man, I think upper and lower anthracite on the eastern side is a good place to play for a day.
I would I'm not saying that it's not, but if you stay on the Eastern Reserve, I say the warm-up is probably Barney Rubble, because if you can't have fun on Barney Rubble and find, you know, find it a different, more challenging line, it's a nice wide stretch, and portions of it are every bit as challenging as Rock Creek is at Roush, but you can find a line that is perfect for your Jeep. You can find lines that are a little more challenging than you'd like them to be. And you can find lines that you'll end up with body damage. Upper and lower are two of those trails, like we were saying before, where it's kind of hard to categorize them in any one color, because you can go on upper and based on conditions, that can be a black trail, even though it's a blue. And you can get on lower and you can have a real bad day, as you've seen a couple times in a row.
You and I completed Lower Anthracite together. Everyone had a great time. And then, you know, I went the next two times, once with you and once with Bill, and, you know, didn't make it. You know, it was...
Well, We have had a open TJ with like probably a 4-inch lift and 33s make it up that without an issue, based on it being totally dry, like totally not an issue. But there are times you go there where Lower Anthracite has a creek going through. I don't think you've actually seen it at that level yet. And that's, you know, especially spring conditions there are definitely very different. I had a group of people from the Lake Region Jeepers Association came through last October, and Eric and I guided them up lower, and we had, I don't know, 11 Jeeps make it up lower without consequence. Well, one I shouldn't say that. One JK did lose a fender, and there's a very good picture of that, but that's the guy who has since upgraded to MCEs. He did them the day before you did.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's a wise call, putting those MCEs on there.
Definitely.
So speaking of fenders, actually one of our listeners, they lost a fender before this weekend, but I want to put a shout out to D'Antonio Automotive down in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Tony is going to help them out and get a new fender flare for them, so they don't have to feel lopsided, because one side's just completely trashed. There's just a little bit of fender carnage left. I mean, you can definitely tell that there used to be a fender on there, but they need definitely a new one. And I reached out to Tony for them, and he's going to help them out and take good care of them. He does a great job. I can't say enough good things about Tony. He's such a nice guy, and does great work. So he and I've spent some time together as well. And, you know, he does good work, and the quality is there. So I don't mind throwing, his name around.
No, I'm going to see him on Wednesday. Actually, I'm getting, I don't think I even told you about this, but I'm getting a remote start put in, the factory.
Oh, nice.
Remote start. Yeah.
Nice.
I had it on my 08 Rubicon, and I really, really have missed it in the almost, well, I guess 2 years now I've had this Jeep.
No.
But and the thing that I really miss the most is when we have the dog with us, I can start it and let the heat or the AC run for the dog for a half an hour while I'm not around it with no keys in there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I want one of those. I don't have key fob that actually unlocks, and so I can't do the factory, but I definitely.
Well, actually talk to Eric about that, because he's found a solution for his, and he has the, you have the gray key?
Yep.
Yeah, so if you have the gray key, if you have the sport key like he does, I mean, hard to believe his Jeep started as a sport, but
I know, right?
His has the gray key, and he has found, and the company that makes it escapes me at the moment, but it's they're going to be doing an installation video on it pretty soon.
Oh, cool!
Putting a remote start in his.
Yeah, because that's every once in a while I'll go through a phase of like 2 months that I want a remote start, and as we're going into winter months, I think I'm back itching to do that.
Oh yeah.
So I think that would be. I think that would be good to do.
Well, he's actually squeezing me in this week, because which I'm super happy about, because we're going to Vermont.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Well, next week we're going on an overlanding trip, and the pup's coming with us, and she's got very short hair, and you know, the heat doesn't really bother her much, but the cold, she likes to snuggle up on the couch with blankets and hibernate for the entire winter, and we're taking her out of her natural environment, so we have to make sure we have heat for her.
Perfect. Well, I let me know how that goes. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
And I think Tony runs a great shop down there. I've been to a shop a couple times, and it's one of those things where it's one of those shops that you don't think a lot is going on, and then when you step inside, you're like, oh, he does everything.
Right. It's very deep, and there's been a few Jeeps there for very major overhauls.
Yeah.
So he's got a lot of stuff going on for sure.
Yeah. Last time I was there, he was working on an awesome YJ Islander.
Yeah.
And that's a killer Jeep too.
That's Lorenzo's Jeep.
Yeah.
Lorenzo was a guy that I met him through the Jeep group.
Yep.
And I recommended he go check out Tony because I think he lives closer to the city. I'm not sure exactly where.
He does.
He has taken his JL there, and he's also taken his YJ there, and his YJ is there for a complete overhaul because he found that thing.
He got
that
thing for nothing.
I think living in a parking garage that had been there for 8 or 9 years without having moved.
Yep. He got a steal on that one, and it's a beautiful Jeep. And when he first came to the club, we had a meetup at Hanoverville Roadhouse, which is one of our listeners and one of our Jeep club members. He owns that, which is a fantastic place. I'm just throwing out recommendations all over the place. Hanoverville Roadhouse.
Just go where we go and you'll be fine.
Exactly. You can almost say that true on the trails too. Mark does a great
follow
job
my
there.
Line through life.
But I got to meet Lorenzo there. He sat with me at the table. Man, what a great guy. And, you know, he's one of those young people that's, you know, 10 or 15 years older than me. But, he acts and everything much younger than me. And, you know, his love for his grandkids and his family, he's just...
He's living that retirement life that, you know, everybody hopes to be able to achieve at some point, but he's doing it with Jeep stuff and he's loving it. So,
yeah, he got the bug when he bought that JL, and then, you know, found that YJ. It's a beautiful thing. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
The best part about it was I met him. I didn't meet him. I talked to him online. I recommended Tony, and I think we maybe talked on Facebook Messenger or something like that. And I recommended that he go talk to Tony. I happened to have stopped by D'Antonio's while he stopped by to meet Tony for the first time. So he actually got to meet both of us.
Oh, nice.
10 minutes. So, yeah.
That's awesome. He is a good guy. That's awesome. So let's get back to the trails. Don and Bill and... myself, this wasn't a Jeep Life podcast weekend, but we did some things together. I planned on doing some lives and maybe doing a remote interview, but we were just so enthralled with making sure everybody had a good time out on the trails. You know, Brandon and Bill and I camped out, which the Trailhead Campground right there at AOAA is awesome as well.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a fairly new campground, and the amenities are getting better every time. We actually had a campsite that had electricity, which I know a year and a half ago, I don't think they had.
No, a year and a half ago, I think they had every time we went down there and there were RVs there, they were running generators all night.
Yep. And they do have rules about when you can run generators or not because they have quiet time rules. I'm very glad that they
do. I feel
do.
Like those weren't observed when I was there, but I'm not complaining. I did get to sleep eventually.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was, you know, right up until about 11, it was, you know, it was a lively area. And then right after 11, it was actually pretty quiet. I was impressed, except for us. Yeah. We were laughing too hard.
Yeah.
But out on the trail, you guys... did Fern Ridge again, and you know, you and Eric and Bill, and then you took Lexi How was she on those trails? Did she react really well, or?
She had a great time. It's so great to have her around, because we've been doing it for so long that, like, just every little aspect of it, you know, watching her reaction to it, like seeing the stuff that Jeeps can actually do. When you get to the top of a trail and look at it and go, there's just no way. There's no way anyone's right. getting down that or whatever, you know, like, she really has such a great time, and seeing it through her eyes is amazing all over.
Yeah.
Again. You know, and she's so great. You know, she rode with Billy for part of it, and then she rode with Eric for a little bit, and then after she rode with Eric, she was like, red Jeeps aren't really that cool. I heard her say it out loud. So like, that was your daughter saying that.
She's grounded. So, I don't know. She's grounded. No, I've taken her out on green-ish, bluish, you know, trails, but I've never, we had the opportunity to do lower anthracite the last time we were there. And that's when, Billy's Jeep, the steering went out. And so we literally went 100 feet of that trail and then she sat around all day. So that was her experience with going to a black trail. And so
this
I was hoping that she would have a different experience.
That's everybody's experience eventually when they go whaling with Billy, usually.
That's so true. but thanks for taking her. And I know you guys had a good time. And I know Neil had a terrific group. And I've seen pictures from that. And Ron, they had a good time. And so I did not
know that she was with us until we got out at... we got out at the first trail, which is, I guess, 108. Is that the?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the one that? Is it 108 or 107? Maybe it's 107. I'm looking at an old map of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably not even on it. But that one that we've been calling the bowl. That's we got out. That was the first trail we went to. I was like, let's just do a shakedown real quick, and I led us into that. And every trail, because, you know, we were the advanced group, and there are bypasses for a lot of these things. Anytime we got into a situation where it was more advanced terrain, we got out and we walked it first.
Sure, sure.
And we, you know, like, gave people the opportunity to plot their line. We didn't, it was, like we said, it was a more advanced trail ride. We had Billy. And we had my buddy, Bill Eustace, who is the guy who welds all my stuff back together when I break it.
Oh, right, right.
And is a tremendous technical resource for me, which is, you know, if I'm your technical resource and this guy's above me, I think he's like probably a general and I'm maybe a captain or something. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it works, but he has definitely stitched my nonsense back together a few times. He came with his TJ, which has a Ford 8.8 rear and a locker in it, and only 33s. So it was really only four Jeeps. You know, it would have been great if it was a larger group, but you know, we wanted to, because we had such a varied amount of Jeeps in the group, even though there were only four of us, we wanted to make sure everybody was comfortable with what we were doing before we got into it.
Right.
And nobody turned around, just like when you and I went up lower the first time. It was, you know, everybody was up to the challenge. We picked good trails and we had a blast.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, and it just turned out to be a great weekend. And it's one of those things where, you know, I'm always nervous going into those, as everybody, and I think that's my big thing with our club, is I want everybody to have a good time and a good experience.
Right.
And I think we nailed it with that one. I feel like everybody had a great time. So
yeah.
So thanks for being a part of that.
I don't think there wasn't a lot of trail damage, right?
Maybe a handful, four or five vehicles went down total.
Okay.
I know Ron had.
But everybody drove home under their own power, right?
I didn't see any wreckers there, and I didn't see any trailers.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm going to say yeah.
I mean, including Billy, like I said, the odds are stacked against us. He was there, so.
I know Don did. A trail repair in the parking lot for somebody, and got them home and everything. So yeah. So it was a great weekend.
That was the drain plug on a diff.
Yep. Yep. That's it.
Yep. We had the file on my Leatherman, and that helped.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And I think Lexi assisted on that, didn't she?
She probably did. If there were, she heard somewhere that somebody was turning a wrench, she crawled under a Jeep, you know, and was ready to go.
I am definitely teaching her how to splice synthetic line. Someone knows how to do that.
Yeah, because, you know, I will never learn, you know, let's be realistic.
You can't even figure out how to get Skype working.
Exactly. And this is what I do for a living. Is which leads in.
Is never going to make it to the final edit of this podcast. I know it.
It might not. I might put a marker down on that one. you have been my technical guru. And right about the time that I was going to switch from a steel cable to synthetic, you were doing a lot of work with synthetic and writing. So I thought it was a good time, and since we have been talking about winches lately, I thought it was a good time to kind of jump in there. In the last 2 weeks, put a new Quadratec synthetic line on the front of my Jeep.
Which is a great value, honestly, for the money.
The first time we wound it up and how it moved and just feeling it and I was like, all right, I'm sold. You know, it's for living on steel cable as long as I have, it's nice to be on synthetic. And so I wanted to talk a little bit and let you talk a little bit about, some winch, line maintenance. And if we can talk, you know, I know that you've done some splicing and, we'll start with care and when you first put it on, all the way through its kind of life. And if you want to talk a little bit about splicing, that'd be awesome too.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. The first thing that you have to do, even if it's a brand new winch out of the box or a winch that you've had for a while that is absolutely usable with synthetic rope, like Don and Billy were talking about before, it's important to notice whether your winch is suitable for a synthetic rope, because it can generate so much heat that it can damage the cable. Most quality cables do have an insulative layer on the first few wraps to keep that damage from happening, but it's important to notice, you know, if it really is just a cable that was only, or a winch drum that was only really rated for steel cable, you probably don't want to do that. Because the last thing you want is to create a situation where the cable could be compromised due to heat. But the first thing that you want to do is make sure that you pre-tension it. Because with any type of a stranded cable or rope, you're looking at something that is braided with just microfibers of Dyneema, in the case of synthetic, that needs to be stretched before it's used. Mainly because it influences the way it lays on the drum, and it also makes sure that it's like reached its capacity. The filaments that are a little too short will actually stretch, and some of them will actually break, but it will allow it to lay more evenly and be a stronger wrap. Right. Even if it has a little bit of that fuzziness that goes away. But after you pre-tension it, it's important to look at the rope manufacturer's guidelines for how much weight you should put on it when you pre-tension. There's several good videos. There's a great Quadratec 101 video that's out there for how to pre-tension it, where Rob and Eric go through pre-tensioning a brand new cable. Rope, I should say. But they show you how to do that. And then after that setup, it's not the end of the line for that. You really need to, and my guideline, and this is not necessarily the same guideline as every manufacturer, but quarterly, every 90 days, you should pull your rope or cable out and take a look at it. We can put it in the show notes, but you really need to get all that dirt out of there. You want to use low pressure water to flush all of the, you know, dust and dirt and contaminants, and especially with that coal dust that we get at Roush and AOAA, that stuff is disgusting. And it really will chew apart those fibers if it's impregnated enough. Just from vibration and tensioning and all those things, it can actually eat those things away.
Yeah.
So every 90 days, it's a great idea to, like, clean it up. But It's also a good idea if you have a steel cable like you had on your winch up until very recently. You want to run that thing all the way out and run it all the way in. Check for any signs of damage. Anytime you use your winch, you should check it afterwards to make sure that everything's great.
Yeah.
But the steel cable does, you know, like it can benefit from a little bit of oil. There are some people that say you should use wheel bearing grease on it. I think that's a little excessive. Like a light oil could probably be okay. You should check with your manufacturer on that. But just running the winch line all the way out and then spooling it back in with the motor allows the grease within the gearbox of the winch to redistribute and lubricate the parts that it maybe didn't have lubricant on. I know that you guys talked about water intrusion and dust intrusion and all that stuff.
Yep.
Some winches don't have the benefit of a very high IP rating. And being able to redistribute that grease inside really goes a long way towards keeping it working the way it should. A lot of the times that we see people on the trail that have problems with their winch, you know, they really need it right then, but they go to use it and it doesn't work. It just seems like it's seized up or whatever, or it's just not working. They haven't checked it in 6 months or 8 months or a year. And that's really not what you should do. Cause if you take care of it, it'll take care of you. And when it takes care of you, it really, really does.
Yeah, exactly. You know, dry metal and metal is not a good thing when you're talking about pulling.
No, not at all. Not at all.
No.
But so, you know, we'll put the article that I wrote about this in the show notes. For the 90-day maintenance. When I did my last 90-day maintenance, I discovered a section of mine that was frayed beyond recovery.
Yeah.
I mean, it was borderline, but it was in the last 10 or 15 feet of the rope. And I figured, you know, most pulls I do are very short. You know, they're usually about a 30-yard pull, if that.
Yeah.
So it made sense to just cut the end of the line off and then splice it. And what I used for that was a Factor 55 Fast Fid, which is if you have a synthetic rope, it's probably a good idea for you to own one of these tools and know how to use it. Even if you're the only one in your group that knows how, it's something that can, you know, if you have a snapped line or you have a frayed line, you pull it out and you go to use it and it looks suspect or it looks like it's worn, you know, 2/3 of the way through, don't use it. Don't risk that because like I was telling you before, every time you do a recovery, you're like gambling on equipment and personal injury.
Right, right.
And you really want to have the best cards that you can possibly have. So if, you know, like a $40 tool, I think that's about what the Fast Fit costs.
$45 on Amazon or I don't see how much it's on Quadratec. I'm sure it's in that same.
I think it's about the same.
Same line.
Yeah, and the that tool really can change the way your day is going.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, $45. I think that's enforced MSRP. You got to be really careful with Amazon and any company because there are a lot of knockoffs
around on there. Yeah.
So I'd recommend buying it from Quadratec over Amazon. But there's some videos, and I wrote an article about how to use it. It's a very simple procedure to resplice the end of your line and just change the way that hoop works. It's not something that you want to risk. If you pull your line out and it doesn't look good, it's 5 minutes to fix it.
Right.
If you, in the last five, you know, feet of your rope, if it rubbed against some rocks and it looks bad, when everybody stops for lunch, you can eat real fast and fix it before anybody even notices. It's very, very simple to use.
Yeah, you kind of gave me a run through it, a real quick run through when I was over at your place.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it was right after you wrote the article, or as you're in the process of writing the article.
Yeah, yeah. I did it a few different ways. I did it the way that you would do it as a fast repair.
Yeah.
And then the way that you would do it as a permanent repair, where you actually taper the end of the line, which requires a little bit more care. Maybe not something that you would do in the woods, but I think it only affects the overall strength of the splice by about 10%.
Okay.
So, you know, it's for overall longevity, yes, you should taper the end of the line and I show both ways to do it.
Okay.
But it's, you know, it's something that doesn't necessarily have to be done. If you're just like looking at your line and you pull it and it's on the tree and you see that it's, you know, as it gets taut, it starts to like look really bad in one section. Yeah. Stop what you're doing. Cut the line, splice the end again, and give it another shot. Like, you, it's just not worth having, even, you know, even with a synthetic, there is a lot of kinetic energy built into it. I know that there has been a myth, like you guys talked about in your earlier winch articles, where, I'm sorry, your earlier episodes where you talked about winching. There was a myth that it just drops, and it does not. It's not as dangerous as a steel cable breaking, but it's close. And it's, you know, again, it's like, how do you measure danger?
Right.
Like, it's best to have none, right?
Right.
So
as
that's
close
the kind
to
of
zero that, as possible.
Yeah, the closest you can get to zero danger is the best way to go about things. It's like, it'd be like just walking up to a street that you've never crossed before, not looking both ways and just going. Like, there's no reason to do that when you could just take a little bit more care and make sure everyone in the area is safer.
Yep, agreed. Now, and the question comes to me, and I need to, I think I need to, what about covering your winch when you have synthetic line on it? Is it more important to cover it than not cover it? My guess is yes, because of UV and dust protection, but I wanted to hear what you said.
So UV, I think, is more of a factor than dust as far as synthetic rope is concerned. UV damage can actually occur pretty easily and cause damage to the rope without it even being used. I have a recessed winch bumper where direct sunlight isn't really an issue. If you have a top-mounted winch and you're using a synthetic rope, a winch cover might not be a bad idea. But even so, like, hanging your synthetic cable against your fairlead and then going over to like a, you know, going over to the end where you're grabbing onto a D-link on the other side of your bumper, or even wrapping it around one D-link and onto another. There's a lot of really weird ways that I've seen people like displaying their winch rope for no reason. The less of that you have out in the open, the better. Abrasion damage can happen if you're trying to climb up over a rock or a tree or whatever. Abrasion damage can very easily happen the more winch rope you have exposed. UV damage is a serious, serious issue because that happens even when you're parked. That doesn't happen when you're in the woods.
Right, right.
As much, but every single day you have that thing exposed to the elements, it's really taking damage. And the road salt that we have in the winters, all that stuff can grind away at your cable and really compromise the end of it. It's much better to have it covered up. I know that some higher end winches actually have a rope cover that you can snap in place.
Oh yeah.
Then there's also the neoprene covers. Those are also an option. Even the end, if you have a Factor 55 flat link or a Flat Link Expert or even an Ultra Hook, there's a, there's a thing that you can get called a rope guard, which is awesome, that keeps it from getting any type of abrasion damage, but also shields the front of the end that goes around the thimble, that part that sticks out, that it shields it from UV damage.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I put one of those on in the second article that I wrote about winch rope maintenance.
Yeah, I think that would be... Oh yeah, I saw you did have a rope guard on one of your hooks.
I did, and so that rope guard is relatively inexpensive. I had it on my flat link.
Right.
I now have a flat link expert, and I got a rope guard for it, but because they're silver and my, you know, for lack of a better term, my Jeep is very blacked out.
Yeah.
So I don't really want anything silver on it. So I'm gonna send that. They actually give you a second sticker to install if you decide you want to have it coated. I'm sending it to Shore Polish in Toms River, New Jersey, and they're gonna powder coat it matte black for me, and then I'm gonna install it.
All right, that's perfect. I like it.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm the same way. I'm definitely. It has to be a certain color. You know, I'm all red and black. I can't have anything silver on there.
Well, at least some of it's not red.
At least some of it, right?
yeah.
And I definitely want to have you back out and maybe do a whole episode on a closed system as well, and the importance and why that is important to have that closed system. Because I know that you've got me.
We could absolutely, if we did a video, I could show you in real time how easy it is to splice the end of a line with a fast fed.
Yeah.
And I could even, like I was saying earlier, I'd love to teach Lexi how to do it. So it could be the kind of thing where I show it as somebody who's done it a bunch, and then she does it as somebody who is a total beginner. Yeah. Honestly, the amount of time that it takes me to do it and the time it's going to take somebody who's never done it before is maybe a minute longer. it's such a simple procedure. It's something that once you see it done, you understand how it works, and you'll understand the benefit of having the Factor 55 fast fit in your kit.
Right.
You should have, you know, if you're running a synthetic rope, it's just something you should have.
Yeah. I definitely put one on order soon. For mine, but no, that's good information. And I think, you know, winching is one of those things that, you and I've talked about it, that it and I know
we've talked about it, and then we've also had to use it. So
matter of fact, one trip we six full line pulls. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, something like that. But there was a snatch block. We were pulling puddles sideways. It was a mess.
It was definitely a mess. But it's something I think that's actually a part of the activity that people think, you know, let their ego get in the way and we'll go, you know, I don't think I should pull a line here.
No.
I think sometimes it's good to have a safety line or something, you know, to maybe help you over an obstacle so you don't break something in the process.
It's a tool. It's absolutely a tool that you need to do what you're doing. And if it's something that can save you, like I was telling Billy a while back, like, I would much rather spend 10 minutes rigging a recovery setup, you know, even if I'm having to use a snatch block or the that rope retention pulley that we used when we were on lower anthracite, that like donut thing that Factor 55 makes.
Right.
Even if I'm like having to do a complicated recovery rigging, I would rather do that than replace parts at home that I have to buy. I've already bought all the recovery gear.
Yep.
I'd much rather use that recovery gear to prevent damage to any of my equipment, my U-joints, my, you know, taillights like you've seen. You know, body panels are a real pain to replace. So any of that stuff, if it's like, you know, if I'm in a sketchy situation where it looks like, you know, there's a 50% chance that if I do what I'm doing and I'm going to hit this object over here, I'm going to pull cable every time.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just like my bumper is a tool to protect my Jeep. My winch is a tool to protect my Jeep.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and me as well. You know, it's a tool to protect me as well.
Right. It's something that needs to be treated with respect and used safely. And like, I've learned a lot about winches in the years that I've been wheeling, but I've also done a lot of vehicle recovery professionally prior to that. And the one thing that you really, really need to be aware of is it is safer for you to be in your vehicle using that long remote to do self-recovery and have everybody out of the blast zone and have somebody spotting, but have them spotting from a safe location.
Yeah.
You know, you really like, you don't want to be standing by your bumper trying to pull yourself out of a mud hole in the front of the Jeep, exactly where that cable's going to go if it breaks. Right. You know, that's not where you should be.
No. And I encourage people to make sure they have, and they've taken good care of their winch and their winch cable and winch line. But use it when you need it, and don't let your ego say, oh, I'm weak if I use my winch. Use it, help yourself out. You know, save your Jeep, save a little bit of time and energy too, you know?
Yeah. Well, next time, if anybody's placing an order with either Factor 55 or QuadraTech or whomever that has this in stock, there is a basic guide to winching manual. And I know it says basic in the name, and everybody says, nah, well, you know, I understand how winches work, and this is only going to be a few pages.
I have it sitting at my desk here because I've actually gone through it. It's 39 pages long. And it's far more than a basic because it shows straight line pulls, it shows angled pulls, it shows how to use a snatch block to redirect your line as well as to double your capacity. It's a basic safety manual that I think everyone should read if they're interested at all in self-recovery and doing it safely.
Yeah.
$4 right now. Like, it's not, this is like something that, I don't know what your copay is on your insurance policy, but I know it's more than $4.
Right. Yeah.
If you have to go to the emergency room or if anyone else does. I mean, I've spent $4. I've spent more than $4 in Band-Aids after a wheeling trip. I mean, this is something that is just, it's so far beyond a no-brainer. It's something that everyone should read. They also have like how to use a kinetic rope for recovery and disabled vehicle towing, which is something that I think Billy should probably look at, just so that when people are towing puddles out of the woods, I hope he never has to tow puddles out of the woods again.
That's my plan. Is
right. Right.
For him to never do that.
But the basic guide to winching and that other guide as well, they're very good reads. They're inexpensive. There's something that even if you have it and you read through it once and you pass it off to a buddy, that's money well spent as far as I'm concerned.
Yep. That's great. And thanks for discussing that with me. And I know you're the expert in that and we're all learning as we go. And I love that you have.
Listen, expert or not, I'm still learning. There's always going to be something like where you're fighting the laws of physics to try to do something. And you have to just keep your eyes up and be safe if you can.
Well, and the cool thing about that is technology is changing too. I mean, you know, the same Factor 55 has brought in, you know, the technology that wasn't available 5 years ago.
Sure.
You know, so that changes a lot. Where can people find us? I that's normally where we go next, but I've got four amazing reviews on Apple Podcasts that I'm going to read and, you know, just kind of celebrate a little bit. First one is from Bama Country Boy. So I'm going to assume that he's...
Where do you think they're from?
Alabama.
I was going to say Delaware. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. South Dakota, maybe? Bama maybe. Country Boy. Just started listening. I'm 10 episodes in and love it.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah, right. So I love it. Thanks for that. And, you know, I grew up just north of Alabama.
I live in Huntsville.
In Tennessee. Yeah. Huntsville's a great town.
I'm
not afraid of Huntsville. Some parts of Alabama I might be afraid of, but not Huntsville.
It's a bit mobile. No, mobile, however you pronounce that. Whatever.
Mobile. Mobile.
Mobile home.
I am Peter Torres, Best Jeep Podcast. Stop looking for a new podcast and listen to the Jeep Life Podcast. Not only do they have awesome product reviews, share great insight into Jeeps, create great content, and are super engaging, but how can you not want to listen to that big bearded sexy man on the mic?
Wow.
I'm going to assume that he's talking about me. You know,
well, not me.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, we can't even see you.
Should your wife be concerned after that interview?
I don't know. I don't think so. The team is absolutely amazing. And I have messaged them multiple times. They have helped me with deeper questions on my personal Jeep. Thanks for a great podcast. I look forward to listening to each week, man. Thanks. You know, it's just good to hear some of this. You know, I don't want to just pat myself on the back, but it kind of is a reward for all the hard work and says, hey, you know what? You're doing something cool. So I appreciate that. And you know, I wish Don and Bill were here to take some of the credit too, but tonight it's all us. It's all us all the time.
I'm going to accept full credit for all of this. I have personally helped Peter Torres with things.
Yeah. I think we all have. And that's, you know, cool thing is he's willing to actually ask questions.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people are afraid to ask questions or they're kind of nervous about it or, hey, you're going to be ridiculed. Nope. Ask the questions, because if you make the mistake, that's when either people get hurt or you get ridiculed, you know?
Right.
So ask those questions.
I don't know which one is worse. I mean, people get hurt is worse, but
obviously. Well, it depends on who it is. But no, this is.
Is that going to make the cut or what?
No, I might leave that in. I don't know. Okay. I'll have to talk to the lawyers. Tamara Lynn, 1968, listened while on her Jeep road trip. What a perfect thing to do. Out enjoying the Jeep life on her Jeep road trip and listening to the podcast. My husband and I listened to your entire podcast from episode 101 to 127. Wow. While we traveled from northern New York to Arkansas to Missouri to Indiana and back to New York. Whoa, what a trip. We drove
to. That's a lot of fuel stops.
That is a lot of fuel stops. That's a lot of corn that you're passing too.
Yeah.
We drove to Jeep Badge of Honor trails in our quest to hit most trails in our 2015 Rubicon with 35s, 2.5-inch lift. Man, what a great, that's awesome. Thanks for a great podcast. We appreciate you sharing your knowledge with the Jeep community. We frequent Rouse Creek. It's a 6-hour drive for them and now look forward to hitting AOAA. I love that. Yeah. Give AOAA a shot.
It's not far. It's like 22 minutes from Roush. So yeah. If you wanted to do a weekend and do the trails, you know, and then explore some new terrain, you could do both in one weekend. You could even go to Roush. And if you don't feel like camping in their gravel parking lot, because that's awful and I've done it before, you could go to Roush on a Saturday and then head to AOAA, camp at the trailhead campground, and then wake up in the morning and run the trails there. I think that's probably a great move. That's what all those friends we had from Maine did. They camped on Saturday night, and then Sunday we ran AOAA. And if we're being honest, about 5 of the 10 that were there, or 5 of the 13 or whatever, said they had no interest in going to Roush next time.
Perfect.
Not to disparage Roush, but no, they've been there 4 times. And if you've been there 4 times, then it is a destination. AOAA has so much terrain. Like we were saying before, it's like you can go there and discover something new almost every time you go.
Yeah.
And I've been going for years and you've been going for years, but there's so much to see.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely agree with that. So look forward to hitting AOAA and, you know, maybe you'll line up with a Jeep Life outing and maybe we'll meet on the trail. That'd be awesome. You'll be sorry. It looks like ULBSRRY. Is their name. First time Jeep buyer. I had a Ford F-150 that I...
Well, you'll be sorry.
I know, for sure. I had a Ford F-150 that wouldn't do the trails that I wanted to do, so I purchased a 2021 Rubicon. We'll take delivery in late October, so they haven't even gotten it yet. Oh, they're already in. I love it. Found your podcast, and I've learned a lot just listening to you guys. I love that you guys aren't pigeonholed into one of those one way of building Jeeps. Thank you for being a refreshing and educational podcast. By the way, I'll be a West Coast Jeeper. I love it. Yeah, I think that's what's really important. And I listen to other podcasts, but literally, if you're an overlander, you know, you listen to this podcast. If you're a hard rock guy, you listen to this podcast. If you're a mudder, you listen to this podcast. I think that's, we want to be something for everybody. And then if you're literally, you just love your Jeep and you never wheel it, that's cool too, you know.
Well, I mean, honestly, I think all of us kind of have a little bit of an identity crisis in and of it, you know. It's like I would love to consider my Jeep a rock crawler, which is what it is most of the time, but I go on overlanding trips, and when it's super heavily overloaded for those trips to West Virginia or the one that we're going to for Vermont, like it is used expressly for camping, but then I can rip all that stuff out and go rock crawling on black trails.
Yeah.
There are a ton of different ways to put a Jeep together.
Yeah.
And I hesitate to say the word build because it's not always a build. But it's, you can put it together in such a way that I can put a ton of overlanding gear in my Jeep in an afternoon, and I can rip it all back out when I come, and I can drive it to work on Monday.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why a multi-purpose Jeep is a bad thing.
We've talked about that, you know, that we feel like some of our Jeeps, I mean, myself included, we kind of think of it as a dual sport, you know.
Yeah.
Let's do some overlanding, but let's do some rock crawling. But, you know, so I don't think that you should be limited. And I love that they recognize that. And you know, I can't wait to see what they do with their Jeep.
It's, look, it says unlimited right on the side. I'm just
unlimited.
Just putting that out there. Right?
Absolutely. Except on the two-door, and then you're limited.
Yeah, on a two-door. Well, I don't know what those guys were thinking.
I do. It's a short wheelbase. It's pretty awesome. But
I know. I'm just busting on them. But yeah, it is. It's a different setup. It's a more traditional Jeep setup, in fact.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I really just couldn't deal with not having a huge trunk. I don't know why.
Probably because
I came from having wagons. You know.
Right. I need storage.
Yep.
But all those reviews came from Apple Podcasts, and that is the biggest podcast repository. But I think we're also on
Spotify.
We're on Spotify, YouTube Play.
I do Podcast Go on Android, which is actually a Android Auto approved app.
Okay.
That's how I listen to the podcast.
Awesome.
I know you don't care about that, but
no, I do. I do.
It's a thing.
Because I don't care where you get it, just as long as you listen
just
to
get
us.
It.
Just right. Get it, right? And you can also just go to our website, jeeplifepodcast.com. You can listen to the feed right there, because all of the other feeds are going to pull it from there anyway. If you're on Facebook right now, you found us on facebook.com/jeeplifepodcast. That's where a lot of our announcements come out, but we also do our live from there. And I'll do live broadcasts. A lot of times I'll just hit the trail and I'll just hit play and let's talk. YouTube, just go search Jeep Life Podcast. We do a lot of new videos. I know Scott's, got a video up there with us, when we installed the MCE fender flares on my Jeep. And then our Instagram is at Jeep Life Pod. Tag us wherever you are. Just hit us up. I do have some stickers, so if you want some stickers, get in touch with us some way and let us know you want it, and then promise that you'll tag us in pictures with your sticker on your Jeep, and I'll just mail it out. I love doing that. So I sent out two this week. And
that's great.
I'd love spread to send out more. Yeah.
Yeah.
I handed out about 15 this weekend. People came up and said, "Hey, man, can I get a Jeep Life Podcast sticker?" Yeah, sure, here. So that was a good time as well. But Scott, I want to thank you for coming on.
No problem, man.
And filling in last minute. Real was truly last minute. And
oh, it really was. It was. I was outside working on my Jeep, trying to wire up a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm like running a soldering iron and tending all the tips of the things that I'm crimping. And you're like, "Hey, want to be on the podcast?" Sure. Let me just put all this junk away. If we're being honest, Terry, my driveway is still full of stuff that I pulled out of my Jeep that I have to now go pull and put inside.
And do it in the dark.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so I appreciate you coming on with us. And, you know, for Scott, Bill, and Don, here's a big G wave to you, everybody.